You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and you are very welcome to Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews from around the sound and beyond, and I'm your host, Chris Wilson. Today, we are lucky enough to have right in the studio Diane Urbani de La Paz, affectionately known as Diane. She's an author and a journalist around the Puget Sound. And we are also going to have a special guest, her husband, Phil Lusk. And you'll find out why he's important pretty soon. We're going to be talking about her book, All My Love. It's a story of war and hope. It's a personal history of World War II, and it's inspired by over 400 letters written by Don Lusk to his wife, Anne. Well, welcome, Diane. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure.
You know, I'd like to begin with just you reading a little bit from the book and explaining how Don met Anne.
Right. So it's February 1942 in Houghton, Michigan, which is way up on the Upper Peninsula. Young Don Lusk had no idea what the future held, so he decided to go ice skating. This was a bitterly cold night, but as Don, a 19-year-old freshman at Michigan Tech, headed for the college's indoor ice rink, he was feeling a bit hot. He had just had a tiff with Faye, the woman he'd been dating. Don had never skated before, but when you're an athlete who runs like the wind and dominates on the tennis court, you're not afraid to try something new. He stood at the edge of the sheet of ice, watching it glitter under the ceiling lights. A stream of young people glided around the oval, a school of fish in sweaters and mittens. This town on the Upper Peninsula of Michigan was rich in Finnish Americans, families who skied and skated as easily as they took an after-supper stroll. Don, in his rented skates, took one, two, three strokes onto the ice. As his feet skittered out from under his body, he realized he'd never felt sensations like these. Arms outstretched, he sat down, spun, and slid out of the way of the oncoming skaters and came to a stop. The ice was hard and cold beneath Don's hip, but he felt no pain. He took a breath and looked up. A pair of blue eyes looked into his. A halo of blonde curls. Emerald green snowsuit. A small gloved hand held out to him. "May I be of assistance?" the woman said. Then, whoops, and she tumbled down beside Don. The two people, their hands interlocked, scrambled to their feet. They were upright for half an instant before they both fell as one unit, gasping as they leaned into each other. Back down on the ice, they let out a pair of whoas while the woman giggled. The man was silent, too surprised to make a sound. Wobbling, they stood up together and stayed vertical just long enough to guide each other off the rink and onto a bench. "This is fun, but I think that's probably enough skating for the evening. You?" Don quipped. "You know, I think you're right. My skates are dull," the woman answered. Inwardly, she marveled to herself about this guy. His eyelashes. His huge smile. "I'm Don Lusk. Who is my rescuer this evening?" "I'm Anne, pleased to be of help." Anne Turpainen was not quite 18, a student at SUMI College, the school for young Finnish-American women of the Upper Peninsula. The 9th of 10 children of Finnish immigrant farmers, she had done so well in high school that she'd graduated early as valedictorian. Anne was also a knockout whose intelligence shone from those sapphire eyes. The man she'd just fallen for had grown up as an only child, his father a factory manager and his mother a homemaker in Battle Creek. Don was a smart, handsome guy, but he was also a down-to-earth, well-mannered Midwesterner. This night was to be the start of both a friendship and a love affair. As winter turned to spring on the Upper Peninsula, Don and Anne went to dance after dance, spending as much time together as possible. They fit together like the interlaced fingers of two hands. But theirs was not to be a carefree romance. The Japanese had attacked Pearl Harbor 2 months before Don and Anne met. The United States was at war with Japan and with Germany, drafting men by the tens of thousands. Many more were enlisting, no question in their minds about their duty. As troops were deployed in the Pacific and European theaters, the people back home worked in factories, hospitals, and shipyards. They grew victory gardens, conserved their flour and their gasoline, and bought war bonds. As for young Don, he returned home to Battle Creek to work through the summer of 1942. During his time there, he wrote to Anne, headlining each of his letters with the number of weeks until he would see her again. These missives were filled with an ardor that grew by the day. She, however, doesn't seem to have written back to him as much as he wanted her to. Now 19, Anne was busy living her life, working on the Turpainin family farm, taking her time making up her mind about whether to return to Sumy in the fall. Throughout that summer and into early autumn, fighting was intensifying and casualties climbing across the Pacific and in Europe. As Hitler waged his all-out assault on the Allied forces, the United States was poised to drop the draft age to 18. The military also suffered from a shortage of officers and technical specialists. The Army Specialized Training Program was established, giving college students a way to join the cause as engineers, electricians, and officers. According to the propaganda, these soldiers would not have to go to the front lines of battle. For Don, there was no question about what he must do. He enlisted in October 1942, a couple of months before his 20th birthday, and then he waited. The orders arrived at Christmas. A few days into 1943, Don left Anne behind in Michigan to report for duty at Fort Sheridan, Illinois. From that point forward, the military controlled his physical life. In the ensuing year and a half, Don rode the rails to military bases and training centers in St. Louis, Salt Lake City, Spokane, Boise, Rapid City, Missouri, and New York City, and finally to Camp Reynolds Replacement Depot in Pennsylvania. He would go from there to England, France, and Luxembourg to be swept into military actions he and Anne could not have imagined. Through it all, Don wrote letters to her, long descriptions on good stationery of the places he was seeing, and short notes on V-mail paper and postcards. On those pages, he dreamed his dreams for their future.
Well, there you go. You had me at chapter one. There's nothing I like better than a true story, and a story of so many Americans, so many families. And, you know, if you weren't involved in war and your parents might have been, and it's just wonderful to have these letters. And now this is a parallel story because this is in 1942, just at the beginning, and in 2012 you fell into your own story of love and inspiration for this book. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, I met a guy named Phil at a dance in Port Angeles, these many years ago. Mm-hmm. And later, you know, months went by and we kind of friended each other on Facebook. And eventually, we settled on a day to go to lunch together. And so we went to this cafe and, you know, he brought some things to talk about. You know, because he's very well prepared for this date. It was a, you know, lunch date, and I was busy thinking about work. But anyway, so, you know, we're sitting across the table from each other, and he gave me a gift. He gave me Bonnie Raitt's newest CD at the time.
Good start.
It was a really good start, yeah. And then she showed me, I think he read me a letter that his dad had written to his mother some 80 years before. And so, you know, I agreed to go on some more dates with him, and the story came out, you know, through the ensuing months that that Phil had found these letters after his mother died. He had found these letters in her kitchen.
In
one of the cabinets. Yeah, she just had them.
Instead of dishes, there was a stack of letters.
Apparently, yeah, she had a lot of cupboard space. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and so he very carefully, you know, divided them in a file cabinet by date and everything, and it was just, I guess what struck me about the letters was how romantic they were. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we're talking about a 21-year-old and a 20-year-old once he was really in battle and he was writing these letters to his 20-year-old wife. And it's just, he never wrote about until later, I should say, he didn't write about the horrors that he was seeing. He wrote about what they were going to, the future they were going to have together instead. And so his mind was just completely on that when he was writing these letters. And I think that did a lot for his mental health.
Right. To so. Just keep writing and escape what was going on. Well, I'd like to introduce now to you by voice, this is going to be Phil Lusk, Don's son, and he's going to be reading two of the letters from the book, All My Love.
10 days after Don goes to the front line, he sends a short V-mail missive and then a postcard to Anne. At a time when the sound of artillery is still ringing in his head, he manages to send a message of reassurance. The tone and words come in stark contrast to what he's just lived through. November 28, 1944. My darling wife, I'm going to take a few minutes off and get a letter out to you. Have been quite busy for the past week and wasn't able to write. Have been out in the field in tents, and it has rained most of the time. Still have the portfolio, so will write a decent length letter when I get more time. Have had a fairly good chance to see this war firsthand. Didn't care for it a damn bit either. Am safe now for a while. The next time the company moves up, it will be rough. Don't worry, as I'm coming back to you. All my love, Don. The following day, Don writes a shorter note. This one on a season's greeting postcard, about the size of his hand. On the front is an image of a lighted candle. By now, he must know, on some level, that his letters might arrive in Michigan after his death at the hands of the German army. November 29th, 1944. Hi, hun. Have been busy. Am writing this on my knee out in the woods, so it isn't too neat. Am with the 26th Infantry Division, which is a good outfit. I still love you, darling, and I'm thinking of you all the time. All my love, Dawn. P.S. We'll write a letter as soon as possible, but can't as yet. Give all the folks my love. February 12, 1945. My dearest wife, the weather here has been rather chilly, but no snow. Rains a bit nearly every day. One good thing is I don't have to be out in it. The weather was the worst thing I had to put up with in the infantry. Never had much of a chance to get inside. Couldn't build fires as the smoke would make a nice target. And as for me, I'd rather be cold. Oh, say, did I tell you I have one of those combat infantry badges? They gave me the gadget at Eschdorf up in Luxembourg on the 27th of December, if I remember the date right. That was the first day I was ever strafed. Was in the command post putting on some winter undies and had my pants and shoes off. Was really caught with my pants down that time. A few days later, I took my shoes off to change my socks when a Jerry combat patrol ran into us. If I have to go up on the front again, I doubt whether I'll do any more stripping down. A fellow just doesn't feel or look like a hero with his pants down. Honey, I hope you will forgive me for the one time I was untrue to you in France. It wasn't too bad. I only got kissed twice. It happened this way at a town named Sagermines. We had just chased some krauts out of a pillbox, so four of us went down to a farmhouse about 400 yards to clear it out. The Jerrys ran before we got there, so didn't have any trouble with them. There was still a French family living there, and among them was a fellow about granddad's age with one of those nice long white beards. So he started in with bon ami, and from there he progressed to the point of kissing me on both cheeks. It was just like putting your face in a straw stack. By the way, I bet you were fooled when I started out on this last story, eh? There were a few things that were funny, and a hell of a lot that weren't. If some of the people back home could see a few of the things that happen up there, they might change the attitude they have been about finishing this up tomorrow or so. So let's forget about it, as I've had what is known as a bellyful of that business. Honey, one thing you don't need to worry about. You're the only one I love. This is just about all I can think of to write. Tomorrow night, I'm going to see about dropping the folks a line or two. All my love, Dawn.
I'll be seeing you in all the old familiar places that my heart and mind embraces all day through.
We're talking to Diane Urbani de la Paz about her book, All My Love, A Story of War and Hope. It's a self-published personal history, and I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that. What are the advantages? Because a lot of people have these stories, and I think that you have done a tremendous job of making this really a professional memoir.
Thank you.
Personal history. And so what do you think are the advantages and disadvantages of self-publishing?
Well, yeah, that's a really great question. You know, I had to tell this story. I mean, I've been telling other people's stories for the past probably 30 years as a journalist, and this was just too good. You know, I mean, partly because there are some echoes, you know, in Phil's life to his dad's life, and then Phil has a son himself who's named after his father, and there are all these things that happen that just made it this beautiful full circle of a story. So I wanted complete control, frankly, of how the story was told. I didn't want an editor telling me, you know, oh, you need to do it this way or that way, and I hired an editor to proofread it and to give me some, you know, some guidance. But I wanted, you know, ultimate control.
Mm-hmm.
So I met this other Port Townsend author named Velda Thomas, and she self-published a book called Blended. And it's about her background as a racially mixed woman. Mm-hmm. And it's about her background and her family. And she chose to self-publish it for the same reason. She wanted control. She didn't want somebody who's not aware of the nuances of the story to be telling her how it should be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're writing this, and it's kind of during the pandemic, right?
Yes.
So how did you kind of keep yourself going and keep organized? And it seems like, you know, you've got this big file cabinet full of letters. So how did you kind of push through it? What helped?
Right. Well, I want to say that there were 432 letters mm-hmm. written during this period, but I only put 18 letters in the book.
Right.
So people, don't worry. You know? Just the 18 best letters are in there to help tell the story. So I, at the beginning of the pandemic, I joined an online writing group that was sponsored by the Jefferson County Library.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. And so I met these three women who also wanted to, you know, somehow, you know, keep themselves cheered up. Mm-hmm. And I wrote one chapter at a time, and I would read to them every week when we got together. And then even after the library-sponsored group ended, we kept meeting. And they kept giving me, you know, all kinds of affirmation to keep going. So, yeah. So okay. The pandemic, you know, it was another one of those silver linings.
And you're someone who's used to deadlines. Did you set yourself any deadlines, or did you have deadlines for finishing this book?
Well, fortunately, I had the writing group meetings to keep me going. But, you know, I just, at one point in 2021, I just got really sick of talking about how I was going to write this book, and I just said, okay, I'm doing it. And I went for 3 weekends. I rented a cabin out in Coyle, which is really far from everything.
That's a good tip for people.
Yeah, yeah. I needed the internet because I was using a lot of old newspaper articles, mm-hmm. you know. But I was really careful to not use the internet for anything else while I was out there, and that allowed me to actually finish the book finally.
One thing that is really special about this book is that you interweave the factual information about World War II with the personal story and the letters. So talk about your research there and the trips that you made with Phil, like, you know, to get information. And that really comes across. Like, you went to see the Queen Mary, right? Not the Queen,
right.
But the ship.
The ship, yes, yes. Well, and I didn't know that the Queen Mary, the huge luxury liner that's in Long Beach Harbor, was a troop ship. But boy, did I find out. So she would carry 15,000 troops from New York Harbor to England. And they were stacked, you know, like sardines below decks. And there wasn't room enough for everybody to sleep at the same time.
And even crossing the Atlantic to get to Europe, that was dangerous in itself.
Right, because you could get hit by, torpedoed.
Right, yeah. Torpedoed on the way. And you also went to battlefields in Europe. Did you go to the Battle of the Bulge site?
Yeah, we went to Luxembourg. And the Battle of the Bulge kind of stretched across Belgium and Luxembourg. And Phil actually did some mapping research and found the actual spot where Don was, you know, when he wrote this letter on Christmas.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah, the Christmas letter is in the book. And then we went to the site where he was because the military keeps records of all this, right? Mm-hmm. And Phil traveled to the National Archives in Washington, D.C. to find out about all these movements of this particular infantry regiment. So, or infantry division, I should say. And, you know, there were thousands and thousands of men on both sides, you know, tromping through the snow, trying to kill each other. So, so we went there, and I just had an amazing experience, again, that I write about in the book, in Luxembourg, out in the country, you know, where we knew that Don had been. And, you know, it's strange because you can feel the presence of someone when you're out there.
Well, I imagine that's a pretty powerful place to be for all of the things that went on in that place. Well, here we've kind of said that he ends up at the Battle of the Bulge, but his war didn't start that way. He started out as an engineer.
Right.
And so he thought he was going to be completely safe. So how did it evolve that he saw was, you know, had action in some of these big battles?
Yeah, well, he joined up in late 1942, and he had heard about this program called the Army Specialized Training Program, ASTP. Mm-hmm. And the joke was that stood for Almost Safe Till Peace, ASTP. Mm-hmm. But the deal was that he could train as an engineer and an electrician and then do all this technical work out in the field, but not have to go to the battlefront. Okay. So, I mean, you know, nobody wants to be in the infantry, I don't think. But so then, you know, here we come up to June of 1944 when the invasion of Normandy happens. Okay. Huge push from the Allies. Well, you know, that's always, well, pretty much always portrayed in history as a big victory, you know, as a huge step forward. Well, yes, but there were just thousands of casualties. And then when they went on to the Lorraine campaign in northern France, even more casualties. It was horrible. Mm-hmm. So they had to have what was called replacements.
Yeah, the replacement center. I thought that was quite a euphemism.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like you're a replacement. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, Don had some training as a rifleman. It was supposed to be 17 weeks of training. He had 7 weeks of rifleman training. So he went into the infantry. He was a replacement for one of those casualties in France as a rifleman. And it was like, here you go. And after he went in, they started bringing in people who were cooks or mail carriers and, you know, people who'd had almost no training.
Right. Because they needed more and more men to fight in these really horrible battles. I think America sort of got a big wake-up call when we saw Saving Private Ryan.
Yep.
About D-Day. But I'm not sure there's been a real movie about the Battle of the Bulge in the Ardennes Forest in the winter. But that is really brought to life here about just how miserable it was and how many people were lost. Mm-hmm. And you also write about Patton and, you know, just give us the history of what was going on at that time. But not to end on that note, really, they had their reunion and it was a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about what happened when he got home.
Well, it's just amazing because he spent months in a hospital outside of Liverpool, mm-hmm. England, recovering from trench foot. You know, his feet froze, literally froze and turned black. So he had to lie on his back for months, and he wrote a lot of letters during that time. And then when it was finally possible for him to put on a pair of shoes, he was able to ship out and come back to the United States. Mm-hmm. And so they met up in Chicago. And that's the picture on the cover of the book is the two of them on that day.
They look so happy, yeah. And so in love. So let's just leave it at that. What a wonderful story. And thanks for bringing it to us, Diane. And I'm so glad that, you know, your real co-researcher, Phil, was also able to bring this to life for us, because I can just hear Don in his son's voice. You've been listening to Book Lovers Cafe, a program for everyone who hasn't read everything. Today we talked to Diane Urbani de la Paz about her book, All My Love, A Story of War and Hope. I hope you can join me next time to talk more about books and authors. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. You can listen to past shows and other programs from the podcast page on the website at kptz.org. And while you're there, you can make a donation to the station as well. Thank you so much to the engineer and our editor, Taylor Clark and Carl Allen, and all the volunteers and supporters who make this station possible. See you next time.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can count on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree. Christmas Eve will find me where the love light gleams. I'll be home for Christmas, if only
today's musical selections included Vera Lynn, I'll Be Seeing You, and Bing Crosby, I'll Be Home for Christmas.